The World is Round by Tony Rothman. Prologue. The universe has become old and craggy and has turned around on itself, now falling inward to the primordial chaos from which it emerged some 40 or 50 billion years earlier. Civilizations have come and gone. We focus our attention on one. Whether or not the inhabitants resemble humans is unclear, but because they act like humans, we might as well take them to look that way, too. Chapter 1. Signing on, in the classical style. Stringer was tall and slender, even skinny. That may have been why he was called Stringer to begin with. On the other hand, the name may have been no more than a bitter sound, signifying nothing, which we write as Stringer. It is not clear which is the case. It is also unclear whether it makes any difference whatsoever. So it will be left at that. Stringer had thin, jet-black hair, the kind that was impossible to keep out of his eyes, and which made him look perpetually wet, as if he had just come in out of the rain. This time, however, he was wet, to the bone, and in the rain. It wasn't a feeling he liked. This time, it was one of those nasty, windy nights, too cold for summer, that could convince Stringer his whole life was a feeling he didn't like. The rain was not only cold, but green, bright like Stringer's eyes. Green rain, green snow, on the rare instances when it came. Green eyes against gray-green skin. There must be copper in the water. Stringer used to wonder about things like that, but no longer. He thought it a waste of time. Pausing for a moment, stooped over as usual, feet ankle-deep in water, Stringer turned up the corner of his battered cloak around his neck. He delved into his pocket and pulled out the imprinted card that kept track of his wages. The numbers glowed, the day's balance displayed on a thin layer of liquid crystal. Not much, he thought, but enough to keep him alive. Working as a machinist down in the transport shops was hard only on his back. Perhaps he'd stick at it another week before moving on to something else. The heavy patter of rain continued, not interested in stopping. Stringer turned the corner on which he was standing and walked across the street to the rail stop. He jostled his way through the crowd closer to the platform for a better shot at the next one that came by. It did not come close to stopping, but in the moment during which it slowed, Stringer sighted a strap left vacant by a disembarking passenger and jumped for it. He caught the strap and hung on, precariously tottering over the back trolley. Another potential passenger missed his strap and slipped off, perhaps to be crushed by the rattling train of wheels. For a brief instant, Stringer felt his body move reflexively to help the man, but he stifled the urge and instead laughed to himself, as he knew the other passengers were doing. 10 minutes later or so, he released his strap and jumped off. There was no paved road here. He splashed along in the mud past shops that were pieced together with wood or metal or anything else that would hold them up. Glancing over his shoulder, he could see the lights of the skyscrapers that dominated the distant skyline. A queer mixture, this town, pass under Tranchy. The sign glowed elsewhere, clearly, even in the rain. Stringer ducked into the half-open door, pulling it shut behind him. Elsewhere's was packed that night, probably because of the bad weather. Stringer shook himself off on the entrance platform while looking for some familiar faces. He saw too many of them. Every vagabond this side of the Tranchy Mountains must be here. He walked slowly down the steps into the main hall, almost expecting to trip over a body lying on the stairs. "Stringer, you rat!" Stringer lurched forward as a sharp slap caught him on the back. "Sit with us!" It was Filder. At least, that is a literal, if not appropriate, translation of his name. The only thing Stringer knew about Filder was that he existed. That was enough. "So what do you say, Stringer, old man? I haven't seen you in quite a while."
"Old man?"
Stringer nodded. "Give me something to drink."
"My pleasure. Give this man some cob."
Filder bellowed to one of the attendants, and a round of drinks was brought instantly. Stringer sat down with his fingers curled around a warm cup. The room was large, but with beams so low that you could break your skull in them if you weren't careful. It also smelled. It smelled of bodies, of warm cob, of dirt, of all the things with which Stringer lived. The roof, made of tin, was rotten and looked as if it would cave in momentarily, but it had been that way for as long as Stringer knew of the place. And for as long as he knew of the place, he had never found out who elsewhere was. The patrons, never sure who was the real one, called all the attendants elsewhere, and the attendants, all responding to that name, of course, never let on, either. Elsewhere's, a rattletrap of a flophouse on a rattletrap of a planet. In fact, the name of this planet might be loosely rendered as Two-Bit, which adequately reflects the sentiments of the inhabitants. If Fildert had not called his attention to it, Stringer never would have noticed the conversation that was being held in shadow at the next table. Three men, partially hidden behind post and beam, were engaged in a discussion consisting as much of raised mugs, flailing arms, flashing grins,
and twinkling eyes as a verbal exchange.
Well, my good man, I've had some preliminary tests run on your sample, and my guess is that you have something. I may be willing to back you if you can be sure of getting to your city.
Hendig says he shall get you there, and so I shall.
The third man joined in. All Stringer could see of him was a giant beard jutting out from behind a post, incredibly muscular arms occasionally pounding on the table, and a large gray sack resting near his foot.
It seems to me to find that navigator will be more than an unlikely trick, yeah?
Unfortunately true. Not a very poetical solution to the problem, but it seems it will have to suffice. What do you say, Valyvar?
Sometimes, to be sure, it is difficult to distinguish between saints and maniacs. But if it is to be worth 6 or 7 years to you, I'm for it. Yeah, we'll get a lot of sleep, at least.
Stringer could only catch bits and pieces of the conversation, which he found indecipherable and not of any great interest, so he stopped paying attention and went back to his cob.
So, Stringer, Fildert said, what do you think of this man Hendig's story?
Stringer looked up at Fildert uncomprehendingly. Fildert was an idiot, and Stringer had never liked him. Why they were sitting together, he didn't know.
Sorry.
He shook his head.
You haven't heard about Hendig, then?
A woman who was leaning on Fildert's shoulder piped up. She had a great deal of Cosmotron blue on her face. To Stringer, it looked hideous.
Hendig tells us that he found a new planet around some star nearby. I keep forgetting its name.
Barrythron, interrupted one of the three men at the next table who had stood up to order a drink. He paused and leaned over Stringer's table.
It's about as far as we've gotten from here, about 10 light-years, if I'm not mistaken. A rather interesting tale Hendig has told me. He claims to have found a truly amazing city, complete with fabulous treasures and mysterious forces, and he tops the whole story off by saying the inhabitants don't even know the city is there. Quite a tale, I'd say, my young friend.
Stringer glanced up at the man. He was indeed several, though not many, years older than himself, perhaps as tall, perhaps not, but certainly more huskily built, and wore a beard trimmed to a point. The scar that ran from the corner of his mouth to the corner of his left eye indicated a vigorously used life. But this scar and the fine lines that crisscrossed the forehead could not disguise the bright enthusiasm for that life which the entire face radiated. Stringer blew across the mouth of his mug and turned his attention to the coarse grain of wood in the table. He scratched at it, and a splinter came off in his forefinger. He pulled it out with his teeth.
"You seem to believe him," he said,
staring at the sliver of wood he had just extracted.
"Ah, yes, I do. There is some evidence that Hendig, contrary to reputation, has not fabricated this entire tale, and I have not told you all of it."
"Hendig says the planet is 100 times the diameter of Tubit," said the woman next to Fildert, a sharp nod stamping her confidence.
"With no nights and days," said a second woman. "And you can even stand up. What do you say, Stringer?"
Stringer took a gulp of cob, swallowing it slowly, thinking over the taste. He inclined his head to one side.
"Do the inhabitants have 3 heads and 5 arms?
Fildert looked uneasy to Stringer, but as Fildert always looked uneasy, Stringer paid no attention and went back to his cob, staring at the little bubbles rimming the mug.
"But Hendig swears..."
"People also swear that Tubit is a fit place to live. I never believed them, either."
The mug was cracked, Stringer noticed, and bubbles tended to collect to the small fissure.
"Be careful of what you say, Stringer."
Was that Fildert again?
"As usual," Stringer heard himself say.
The second of the three men at the other table rose from behind the post and strode over.
"Are you calling me a liar?"
Stringer glanced upward and pushed a strand of black hair away from bright green eyes. The man was very big, husky, clean-shaven, and craggy. He must have stood 2 meters easily.
"Are you Hendig?"
"Yes, so Sarek has brought forth."
"Then I suppose I am," Stringer mused, "calling you a liar."
Stringer's forefinger traced the mug's rim in slow circles.
"Watch it, Stringer," Fildert warned, moving away from him. "Life is cheap on Tubit."
Nothing new, Stringer thought. The only people who lived on Tubit were dumped there by birth or other accident and couldn't get off.
"Look," Hendig said, spitting on the floor. "Hendig has spent the last 6 years of his life getting to and from that planet. Friends I left behind grew old without me. You, look at you. This one was probably just learning how to stand on his own 2 feet when I left here more than 20 years ago. And since you couldn't have known Hendig then, I would keep your mouth shut."
Stringer shrugged.
"I still don't believe you."
"Stringer!"
Giving no warning,
Hendig slammed Stringer on the shoulder and sent him straight into another table. As he struggled to his feet, the table capsized, scattering wood and ceramic to the floor with a loud crash. Milky white cob, steaming, found its way quickly into the cracks between battered planks underfoot. Already a large space had cleared, and the room fell quiet. Stringer straightened, rubbing his elbow. Slowly, he cleared his throat.
"Is that a challenge?"
His skinny body looked fairly dwarfed by Hendig's bulk. Hendig grinned in return.
"First, I am going to cut the hair off your head to within the width of an ant's eyebrow. Then, spare the details."
Stringer drew his Kalin, a fighting knife almost a meter long, very slender, and razor sharp on three sides. He glanced about him. Not only Hendig, but his two companions, the first who had spoken about the planet, the second with the great beard, and even Fildert himself now faced him across the room. Four Kalins unsheathed the one. Stringer was satisfied with the odds. After all, life was cheap on Tubit, including his own. Hendig was rushing him. He moved very fast for his size, Stringer saw, and so kept out of the way on the first pass. Then he watched as Hendig's body and his own appeared, as if seen by an independent observer, to slip into slow motion. Every nerve in his body was now consciously connected to his brain. A millimeter twist of the forefinger, a half-centimeter shift of the right leg, all registered. Hendig held the Kalin high. Too high for his size, thought Stringer, in a fraction of a heartbeat. He brought his left leg closer. No more. Faint high. Hendig's blade is in line. He is pressing forward. "Feel the pressure on your blade," Stringer's wrist signaled. "Hendig is off balance," the mind decided. "This will be easy, just a drop to the knee." But no. From the periphery of his eye came the signal that Fildert was lumbering in. A change of strategy is necessary. Head low. Stretch to the left. Get your left leg out of the way. This should take care of them both. Stringer felt his hair brush against the floor and his left knee press hard against the coarse wood. His knuckle relayed the message of slight resistance as he felt his blade penetrate Fildert's stomach. The sudden force on his outstretched right leg told him that Hendig had tripped over his foot. Stringer spun around, catching Hendig on the flank with the tip of his Kalin, and jumped up, only to find himself restrained by half a dozen arms and his hands locked in the grip of the giant with the great beard. Stringer glanced into that giant's eyes, coal black and burning. He flinched. Even after his body had been released and his hands freed, the eyes still held him pinioned, not from the slightest threat of danger or physical harm, but from a deep, almost mournful compassion which Stringer could not fathom. Finally, Stringer forced himself to turn away. Hendig was sprawled on the floor, clasping his wounded flank and glaring up at him. Fildert's body lay in a growing pool of blood that would fill the cracks between the planks and become a nuisance to clean. Stringer looked at the silent crowd around him. He hoped they had enjoyed the brawl. It did have the unusual element of two opponents almost immediately skewered, one permanently. Stringer laughed to himself, ducked under a low beam, and left elsewhere. The rain hadn't stopped, and it was still chilly. Stringer tucked his cloak around his neck and headed up the street. His quick walk turned into a trot as he ignored those he slammed into along the way. People were out even in the rain. Was there a place on Tubit where there weren't people? Stringer stopped abruptly when he felt a tap on his shoulder. He turned rapidly, half drawing his Kalin. "Hold on now. No harm meant." It was one of those three men at Elsewhere's, the one who had spoken of Hendig's planet, the one who had faced him off with the others but refrained from entering the fight. "Cold night for a walk, wouldn't you say?"
"Nothing better to do."
"I noticed you make friends quickly."
Stringer jerked away.
"Now hold on, fellow. I'm not trying to get you angry."
"You're talking about the rehearsal back there?"
Stringer kept walking, his cloak dipping into the puddles with each stride.
"Rehearsal?
Practice."
The other man smiled as he caught up with Stringer. "I've never seen anyone move so fast, and you are willing to take on four of us."
"One or 100, what's the difference?"
"Some men, in my estimation, would think twice, especially before tangling with Hendig and Fildert. You only touched Hendig's Kalin once."
"Twice."
"Before you had him. If Fildert hadn't rushed in, I would now be sorely missing my invaluable colleague. And Fildert, he was good."
"A tyro. He couldn't handle a Kalin to save his life."
"I would disagree."
"He's dead."
"Nonetheless,
the evidence is in my favor."
"Hoof, as you wish." They were slow and forceful. You win by speed and deception. Yes, so it would seem. Where did you learn to fight like that? Stringer pursed his lips. Everyone at Tubit knows how to fight. Life's cheap, remember? Ah, yes, the planetary slogan. Well, don't you feel anything, now that you've killed a man? I've killed men before. No doubt I'll do it again. Until someone kills me. But you didn't answer the question. What do I feel? Rehearsed. It was a good exercise. The other turned away, and a light from a nearby window caught his half-parted lips. Stringer suddenly stopped his brisk walk for the second time. What do you want? I want you to go to Hendig's world, naturally. You do? He wasn't lying. So? That entire rehearsal, as you call it, was a waste of your talents. Hendig wasn't lying, I'm telling you. The reason I fought him had nothing to do with his lying or not. He challenged me. You provoked him. I was being straightforward and honest, as I am with everybody. Everybody but yourself. Stringer whirled around with a glare in his eye and a raised fist. Sarek, what do you want? A Kalin in your gizzard? I'll be happy to supply... Now, don't go non-linear on me. Stringer lowered his fist. He had never heard the expression non-linear before, but it made sense. He smiled. Non-linear. Where did you get it? Somewhere or other. I don't know. Well, what do you want, anyway? I told you. I want you to go to Hendig's world with me. The rain continued. A drop fell from Stringer's hood to his cloak, and he wiped it off. You really believe him, don't you? Look, the other replied, putting his arm around Stringer's shoulder. I've got something he brought back. I'm not sure what it is yet. We're running tests, but it's a metal, so I'd guess, a ring at that, lighter than magnesium and incredibly strong. A plasma torch won't even touch it. It takes everything we've got to blast through. I've never seen anything like it, and Hendig says there is more of the stuff just lying about, as if it had been abandoned all of a sudden. Much more, he tells me, as well as other treasures. It's worth the risk, I believe, don't you? That's all? Well, when the tests are finished, we can make a final decision, but I will tell you frankly that my nose is more accurate than any tests. Whatever that material is, it will be worth it. Stringer ducked under a nearby awning to avoid the rain. I mean, that's all you want? It's enough, isn't it? It might also be of interest to find out if the place is as big as Hendig said it was. Impossible, of course. Stringer shrugged. I wouldn't know. You're a simply marvelous fellow, do you realize that? Simply marvelous. Why don't you come up with me to my place? I've got something to show you. He pulled Stringer out onto the road again, and they began trotting briskly up the muddy street, past the ramshackle dwellings that seemed not merely content to exist, but to propagate exponentially in such sections of town. When they reached the main road, Stringer's companion punched a call box for a private cab. The two climbed in, and the stranger punched for a destination.
People who use taxis have little need for elsewheres.
One goes where business takes him, my young man. Tell me, he continued as he undid his parka, what's your name, good fellow?
Stringer.
Ah, yes, I'd forgotten. Friends call me Pike. Good enough?
Okay.
Pike laughed.
What's wrong?
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. The taxi stopped after about 20 minutes. With a flick of the wrist, Pike popped his credit card into the tabulator, lifted on his hood again, and was once more out into the rain. Stringer followed in like manner and found himself standing next to the shadowy form of a tall building. He had seen it many times before. It was the headquarters of the Tubit Transportation Corporation. Stringer shrugged and followed Pike into the elevator shaft. A door opened. It closed and opened again. The apartment that faced them was unlike any Stringer had ever recalled. The thick draperies that hung suspended from ceiling to floor were characteristic of the entire room. A fireplace occupied one corner of a sunken pit in the center. The blue and green couches blended into the carpet almost indistinguishably. The whole gave Stringer an indescribable sensation, one that combined the desire to sleep, to retch, and the strong feeling that he was in the wrong place.
This belongs to you?
Stringer, that's very clever of you to guess, indeed. Care for a drink? Pike produced two mugs from an alabaster cabinet and filled them, offering one to Stringer. Stringer shook his head at the extended hand.
Do you own the whole corporation?
As much as any one person owns it. Why don't you take off your cloak? It's dry in here, you know. You can even sit down if you want.
I'll sit down.
Stringer left his cloak on.
What did you want to show me?
Oh, yes, that. Come. Pike crossed to the other side of the room.
The heavy curtains parted at the push of a button. Stringer stood up, felt dizzy, and shook his head. Stand up, he told himself. What's wrong?
Nothing. Then Stringer looked directly into Pike's eyes. Do you ever feel, at night, somebody is trying to talk to you, pull you apart in all directions? Some part of your mind, way down, like a nightmare that is part of yourself?
Pike took a step backward.
No, never. Some of us are in control of our faculties.
Well, come and take a look.
Stringer walked over and peered out the window. It was a long way down. Although it was dark, strong lights cut through the night to illuminate a runway and some low-lying hangars off to one side. There were several ships on the field, needle-sharp noses and swept-back wings gleaming in the rain.
You see, those are just the shuttles. The big ships are up there.
Pike lifted his eyes skyward.
Interstellar travel will soon become big business, I hope. It's time for 2-Bit to start branching out. We've used up this solar system and a few others. If you don't believe me, I could take you for a ride up.
Okay, now what do you want?
Stringer, for an obviously intelligent man, you are not acting very brightly. I've told you several times already that I want you to come with me to Hendig's world.
What makes you think I'm so intelligent?
People who talk like you are either very stupid, with nothing in their heads, or very intelligent and have something to hide. I suspect you are in the latter category. Tell me, do you know how to read?
Occasionally.
Occasionally?
I try to avoid it. Reading confuses, slows down thinking.
Speed and deception, is that it?
Why do you care?
You don't think you'd like a drink?
Pike held out his hand again. Stringer shook his head a second time.
I don't want any uneducated bumpkins on this trip. If you are intelligent, you can be trained to think, and if you are quick, as you amply demonstrated, you can be even more useful. We may be going to a very dangerous place. Clear enough? Besides, I think you'd get along well with the rest of the crew I have chosen.
Who are they?
You've met them. Hendig, for one.
Stringer laughed and turned away. You've got to be kidding.
And Valuvar, for another.
Who?
The big man with the beard.
Stringer whirled around and stepped toward the door. I told you, I'm not going.
You've said nothing of the sort. Tell me, are you good with machines?
If anything.
Electronics? Mechanics?
Odd jobs here and there. Mindless. I try to avoid permanence.
Speed and deception again?
If you like.
Do you know how to write?
Stringer chuckled. My name, at least.
Pike smiled.
You can't be too sure these days. I don't know what's happening to the world. People don't read and write anymore.
Who needs to?
One always needs to. Well, shall we begin?
Stringer shook his head a final time. You are very sure that I'm going with you, aren't you?
Pike laughed, almost guffawed. Then he looked Stringer straight in the eye.
Yes, I am quite sure.
Stringer put up his hood and walked to the elevator. Just as it opened for him, he turned around, lowered his hood again, and gazed back at Pike.
All right, I'll go. But just remember one thing, quite straight. I don't like you much.
Pike grinned.
My good fellow, that's fine by me. I ask you only to remember one thing in return.
Then Pike's grin turned into a frown.
It is not wise to argue with me. Now, shall we get to work?
This time, Stringer nodded, and that was that.